Welcome to BIT, the Brilliant Investment Thinkers podcast. Where the Inside Network, a community of financial professionals, come together to discuss the things that matter in advice, investing, and life. Covering everything from growing businesses to regulation and investing. Our guests will reflect on a lifetime in financial services, sharing their stories, knowledge, and experience. And now, here's your podcast.
Hello and welcome to the Brilliant Investment Thinking Podcast. I'm Lachlan Maddock, editor of Investor Strategy News, and I'm joined today by ClearBridge co-founder and senior portfolio manager Nick Langley. Nick's been working in the listed infrastructure space for more than 20 years. In fact, he helped pioneer it. He was one of a number of forward-thinking Australians who believed that listed infrastructure was not just an asset class unto itself, but one you could get a pretty good return from. So, with a couple of decades of experience under his belt, Nick's well-placed to take us through the listed infrastructure market as it stands today and shed some light on what it's going to look like in the next 5, 10, 20 years. Nick, thanks for joining us.
My pleasure.
So history is important and very few people actually write this stuff down, which I know because I'm one of them. Maybe you could give me a breakdown of how listed infrastructure has evolved and how you and ClearBridge have also been involved in that process.
Yeah, sure. So, you know, really it was the early 2000s that we began to see privatization processes around the world. It was a lot of government selling infrastructure, and a number of those companies ended up in the listed markets. And so, you know, really it was around sort of 2003, 4, 5 that we saw a critical mass of listed infrastructure companies around the globe, which really was the beginnings of this as an asset class in a listed context.
So how were you thinking about it at the time? Was there a moment when you looked at the market and said suddenly, aha, yes, I can access this in a listed way?
There was an aha moment, and that was back in 2005. And, you know, I was working at AMP Capital at the time, involved with Macquarie in the Duet Group, and I was actually CFO of the Duet Group. And, you know, as we looked at the market, there was a queue of money looking to get set or invested in unlisted infrastructure, and we saw that through our dealings at the AMP Group. It was a private equity infrastructure team, and at the same time, you know, we had seen the listed peer group for companies like the Duet Group actually, you know, come about on a global basis. And so we looked at one side and then the other side, and it was the aha queue of money looking to get invested. Oh, look at that. On the listed side, there's a group of companies where literally you could put together a portfolio of, you know, 40 odd listed companies overnight. The sector trades, you know, $6 to $8 billion a day of stock.
So how has it evolved in the sort of intervening time period? What's changed since that 2005 aha moment?
Well, you know, if you look back at what infrastructure is as a whole kind of market. You know, think of it as a group of assets. On the one side, you've got the defensive assets, electricity, gas, water, really poles and wires and pipes. And on the other side, you've got classic infrastructure, anything involved in moving people or goods around the economy, roads, rail, ports, airports. And when you put all of that together in the listed space, a little over $3 trillion of equity market capitalization, call it about $7 trillion of assets. There's about another $3 trillion of assets in the private market. And so, and together, you know, between listed and private, we make up, call it 30 or 40% of the total infrastructure assets in the world. So, you know, you're talking $30 or $40 trillion worth of assets. And the private component, listed and private markets, is about $10 trillion of assets together.
So that's the past and the present. What, to your mind, I suppose, is the future of listed infrastructure? What are the sort of assets that are going to be on vogue?
Well, I think, you know, when you look at things like some of the key trends in the space, and we'll obviously talk about them further, but energy transition, there is absolutely massive amounts of capital that needs to be spent. And we're talking, you know, north of $100 trillion of spending over the next few decades, you know, relative to what is today a $30 to $40 trillion asset class. And so it's going to grow a lot in its existing assets without actually adding too much, you know, new asset base to it. But in terms of new things coming in, think digital infrastructure as a start. You know, that's going to be a big area for infrastructure going forward.
And who builds that digital infrastructure? Is that a government initiative that is then sort of sold off, or is that a private market kind of endeavor?
I think that'll be predominantly private market. Some of it will be done in conjunction or closely regulated by governments, but most of the sources of capital there will come from private markets.
So as you sort of alluded to, you spend a lot of time on the energy transition, and listed infrastructure will obviously be a part of that. We're seeing Green New Deal type plans come out of a lot of countries, like the Inflation Reduction Act. How accessible will some of the opportunities that come out of things like those Green New Deals be for a listed infrastructure investor?
Massive. So narrowly, we follow about 200 companies, you know, across those more defensive utilities and the infrastructure companies, 200 companies globally, about $3 trillion of equity market capitalization. There is an absolutely enormous amount of capital that needs to go into that space over the next few decades. The International Energy Agency expects that between now and 2030, we're going to triple the amount of spending in the power sector, you know, up to something in the order of $2.5 trillion US a year. That's in 2019 dollars. So there's a bit of inflation to add to that. So we're going to see a significant growth in the assets of these companies. And it's worth noting that, you know, the way these companies earn is based on a return on their underlying assets. So as the asset base increases, the earnings of these companies are increasing as well.
So the transition is one thing, but then there is also this sort of kind of feeling or belief that perhaps, you know, the amount of money required to transition everybody in an orderly fashion is not really necessarily going to come through, even with the involvement of private investors, things like that. And not to be sort of a doomsayer or something like that, what are the opportunities in adaptation for a listed infrastructure investor? Not just the transition, but the adaptation to a world that is remarkably different to the one we live in today.
I think that is going to be a really significant opportunity. So your energy transition, where obviously, you know, the path of public policy is move everything you can to electrification as our main energy source, and then power the grid with as much renewables as possible. So we'll build renewables, build out our grids and the like. That's going to take a bunch of time. So in the meantime, you know, we've got to put up with the impacts of climate change. And so one of the key things we're doing is not just adapting, but also mitigating our infrastructure assets against the changes in the climate. So, you know, more frequent, more severe storms. And we're doing that through what we term grid hardening. And it's a significant amount of capital that is going into our asset bases, and our companies are earning a return on, you know, to try and stop the lights from going out every time there's a major storm that goes through.
Are there adaptation style assets that you can invest in? And I suppose the question would be, do they need to build a new toll road on a sort of higher piece of land? I mean, I know it sounds simple, but it is the sort of question that, you know, people in places like Florida are asking every day, where they have had to do similar things.
I think there will be elements of that. A lot of that will be, again, in partnership with governments. But if you think about your existing assets, most airports are in relatively low-lying areas. Mm. And so we're having to, you know, build berms or banks around the edges of airports to protect from storm surges and the like. You know, our rainfall patterns are changing. UK has a huge issue because, you know, they're getting more and more rain in the northwest of the country, but the main population centre is in the southeast. And so they've got to work on how to transport more of that water across the country. And, you know, that has implications for investors. They are going through a regulatory reset at the moment, PR24. And so we've seen the plans from the companies be made public, and those plans were developed in conjunction with discussions with the regulators. And that calls for a 30% increase in their asset base over the next 5 years. So, you know, again, as that asset base increases, the earnings of the companies increase as well. And so we've seen, you know, quite a lot of excitement in the UK water sector just over the last month with, you know, investors looking in that saying, well, actually, that's a pretty low risk way to get exposure to this very significant theme.
On the flip side of that excitement, are you seeing some investors becoming leery about investing in infrastructure, given, you know, it's quite difficult to model the impacts of climate change? They don't necessarily know what they're going to have to invest into an asset to make it, you know, to adapt it to a different world.
Quite right. You know, a thing that's, you know, got some fossil fuel exposure, a difficult investment at present. And when you think about it, you know, as we move to more and more renewables and we're reducing our fossil fuel exposures, then we're going to have what we term stranded assets. We're going to have pipelines that are no longer required, maybe some electricity transmission lines out to a coal-fired power station, for example, that will no longer be required. And part of the regulatory contract is if you don't need a set of assets for the operation of the grid, then the regulator is not going to provide you with a return on those assets. And so there were certainly some areas where investors are, you know, quite concerned about what the future might hold.
These risks aren't as far-flung as they used to be, but they're still a little way off. You know, occasionally, though, there is a big storm or something like that, and that causes quite a bit of trouble, as you've alluded to. But what do you think is an underappreciated risk in markets today, right now, as we speak?
As I look at not just infrastructure, but the investment landscape, energy transition, together with some of the other things that are going on at the moment, you know, digitization, which is, you know, big in the infrastructure space as well, but, you know, AI and the impact on society, together with this trend of deglobalization or at least changing trade routes, I think we are going to go through over the next 2 or 3 decades something akin to the Industrial Revolution, right? But that took 100 years. And different countries went through it at different times. This is going to take 30, 40 years, and everybody's going to go through it at the same time. That means that the investment landscape is going to change. And critically, what I worry about is as we move through this process, there are going to be massive cost of living pressures. And that is going to result in a political reaction, and therefore the policy environment is going to change for investors. And you need to be thinking about constructing your portfolio in a way that you've got some investments that auto-correct for those kind of changes as they come through. And, you know, infrastructure, I would argue, given its regulated nature, has a lot of that built in, pass-through of inflation, pass-through of bond yields over the medium term, you know, depending on which part of infrastructure you're in, you either have exposure or do not have exposure to GDP. Those are the sorts of things that you might want to think about having in your portfolio, particularly if you're thinking about returns over a 10, 20, 30-year time frame.
So over the last couple of years, we've been through a pretty significant period of upheaval in the listed infrastructure market in Australia. Obviously, we had the Sydney Airport take private and a couple of other things like that. Do you think that that age of take privates in Australia is over? And if it is that a function of there just being no more assets to take private, or, you know, the big super funds who want them now have enough?
We're certainly running out of companies. So I think that is going to be an issue. We are going to see likely new assets come to market over time, and we will continue to see capital raising by existing companies to invest in the growth in their underlying asset bases. So there'll be an increased concentration, let's say. But from our perspective, you know, we're not concerned. We're obviously an investor in global listed infrastructure. And, you know, we've got more than 600 companies around the globe that we follow. You know, we shrink that down to a universe of 200 companies to do our detailed work on. But we've got a very significant investment universe that, you know, we think is only going to grow over time.
So the take private trend is obviously more noticeable in Australia just because we do have smaller number of assets. Is that something that is present overseas? Obviously, it would be less of a concern given the larger nature of the market.
It is present overseas, and we've seen a lot of activity in that space over the last few years. We haven't seen wholesale take privates through the course of this year, and part of that's related to the cost of financing for some of these private markets entities. What we are seeing instead is some partnerships with public market companies and/or the acquiring of non-core assets out of public market companies. And so that's actually, you know, resulting in a win-win on both sides. Private markets are getting some exposure to well-run assets. The public companies are able to recycle some of their capital, which reduces their equity needs over time as well.
So you said before you expect that new assets will be brought to market and will ultimately be taken private. Where do you expect those assets to come from?
I think we'll see some renewable companies come to market over time. So there's a lot of development activity in that space, once those assets are up and running, you know, we'll probably see those come to market. There is a lot of expenditure required on our grids. So think about the high voltage transmission lines to connect up all of those new renewable, you know, wind and solar facilities. And so we may see some of those assets kind of come to market over time. So there's going to be a range of different areas where we'll see some of these new assets find their way into the listed markets.
All right, we've only got a few more minutes, so let's get slightly controversial with it. There are still people to this day who insist that listed infrastructure isn't an asset class so much as an investment substitute, that it doesn't offer an additional risk premium that can't be obtained by investing in global stocks. You've been there basically from the beginning. Nick, what do you say to the critics?
So, you know, as you look back over the last, 22, 23 years, since this really became a sector, call it the early 2000s, there's only been one year where there hasn't been growth in EBITDA. So think of that as cash earnings, you know, for the sector. Mm. And that was 2020 when a lot of these assets got shut down. You compare that to global equities, look at the MSCI World Index. There have been seven occasions in the last 23 years where they've had negative growth in cash earnings. And so, you know, we see a significant stability in the earnings profile of infrastructure companies. And that's because, you know, these companies are, their earnings are based on the returns on their underlying assets, and their assets are continuing to grow over time. So it is a very different exposure to global equities. Now, I fully accept that we are listed companies and therefore we have equity market volatility, right, in the short term. But if you look at the returns over the longer term, and the global listed infrastructure organization, GLIO, has done a lot of work on this, the return profile of infrastructure listed versus unlisted, you know, over 10, 20, 30 years is roughly the same. And that's because they're the same underlying assets. They have the same regulators giving the same allowed returns. So over the longer time frame, these assets provide something different in your portfolio to a simple global equity exposure.
All right. Climate change, global warming. What assets do you expect will become more popular in a world with potentially scarcer resources?
Climate change and global warming. So we think about these sorts of investments through a risk-adjusted lens, right? The company started as rare risk-adjusted returns to equity. And so when I think about an investment in the space, I want to know that these companies are going to be able to grow their asset bases over time, and that the regulators are going to provide relatively steady returns or appropriate returns to these companies. So I'm looking for companies that are going to be increasing their asset base. So I think poles and wires, right? You know, recent study by Princeton University in the US suggests that the US electricity grid, the high voltage portion of it, needs to grow by 60% by 2030 and needs to triple in size by 2050. You know, that's similar for pretty much all developed markets. And then think about the climate change aspect and those storms and all the rest of it. The companies are working with regulators to try and mitigate the impact. All of that's leading to more growth in the underlying asset bases. Then you, on the other side, you say, well, are the regulators going to provide steady returns, attractive returns to these companies? Our view is yes, and that's because there is so much capital that needs to go into the space, and the regulators recognize that these companies need to compete for that capital in capital markets. So they need to provide attractive returns to the companies. The alternative is governments do the work. And right now, governments are in no place in terms of their budgets and their fiscal deficits to be able to take on a significant amount of spending on the energy transition side.
So, wrapping up, what's your key message for investors today?
I think be wary of people that say that we will return to a kind of a pre-COVID style of investment environment. I think it's going to be very different going forward. Energy transition is expensive. It's going to result in increased inflation pretty much across the spectrum of goods and services, because our energy is going to be a lot more expensive, at least for the next 20 years. Layer on top of that, you know, the geopolitical challenges and our changing trade routes and the impact of climate change and weather variability, you know, not just for infrastructure, but, you know, on our food inflation and the like, I think we're going to have a very different environment. I also think that the political risk is going to be a lot higher going forward. You know, we have a more fractured society. There are going to be significant pressures, and there are going to have to be hard decisions about who pays for what going forward. And so I think that will lead to greater volatility in the policy environment going forward. And all of that says to me, think about having things in your portfolio that have a natural, call it autocorrect mechanism within them, like regulation, where you get a pass through in inflation, you get to pass through the changes in bond yields. We'll probably have higher bond yields going forward. And you can choose whether or not to take exposure to growth. It may be that we go through a period of pretty lackluster growth for a period of time while our economy's kind of reset to higher debt levels and the like. So, you know, all of that says a lot of uncertainty in the future. Find some things that are uncorrelated or less correlated to put into your portfolio that have that ability to generate steady returns over a long period of time.
Fantastic answer. Thanks for coming on the show, Nick. You've given us plenty to think about.
It's my pleasure. Thank you.